Welcome to The Clever Cookster, your source for tips and tricks from the world's top culinary experts. I'm Kara Rota. Thanks to Audible.com for supporting our channel. Audible.com is the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For our audience members, Audible is offering a free audiobook to give you a chance to try out their service. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/Kara. Our guest today is Rosie Schapp, writer of the monthly drink column for the New York Times Magazine, a contributor to This American Life and NPR.org, and author of a memoir, Drinking with Men. And she still bartends regularly. Is that correct?
That is correct.
So Rosie's here today to share some tips and tricks for what you should be drinking right now. So it's pretty hot outside, although we've been fairly lucky in New York this year. What do you like to drink during the hottest days of summer?
Oh, there's so many good things to drink in the summer. Lately, I've been on a real aperitif kick. And my next column is actually about aperitif. So I've been trying a lot in the name of research, obviously. And, I feel like it's not a bad impulse to avoid anything too super strong during the summer. So highballs are great. I like a little bit of Campari, a little bit of Lillet, especially the rosé Lillet, a whole lot of soda and ice, and then just finish it off with some fresh herbs and maybe a drop or two of bitters. Super simple. Who wants to be working too hard on anything in the summer anyway?
Absolutely. And how about some things that are refreshing without necessarily being effervescent or bubbly or sweet? What are some sort of surprising options?
Well, I think all kinds of wine are refreshing in the summer. I'm a big fan of what some people consider a very trashy drink called the Calimocho, which is red wine and Coca-Cola. I know people feel very strong seasonal tendencies when it comes to beer, and some people would relegate stout or porter to winter and fall, but I think a pint of Guinness is very refreshing on a summer afternoon. And it's also pretty low alcohol, and it's something you can sit with for a long time. So you're probably not going to get too hammered if you're lingering over a good pint of Guinness at a bar in the afternoon.
Absolutely. And how about seasonal ingredients? Is there any produce that you like to use in drinks that you make during the summer?
I love to use produce in drinks. And I mean, there are certain things we can get year-round. But the truth is, we have a much greater abundance of fresh herbs, and I love a super herbaceous drink. I'll muddle just about anything in the bottom of a highball glass. People use mint a lot, and mint is great, but I have a teeny bit of mint fatigue. I think there are a lot more herbs we can use. I love basil. I love lemon balm. Any herbs that have a citrusy cast, I think, are great in the summertime. All kinds of fruits, muddling berries. I'm getting great blueberries from my CSA right now. People might not believe it, but I think blueberry and gin go together fantastically. So lots of blueberry drinks with more fresh herbs. Why not when it's summertime? Use what we've got.
I had something really lovely with gin and gooseberries a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah.
So let's talk through the basics of how you create a balanced flavor profile. What are the components that you're juggling in a cocktail that need to sort of play together and not overwhelm one another?
Well, I think, the most important thing with drink and with food, I think people should probably trust their palates a little more than they often do. Always taste something. You've probably seen bartenders, before they serve a cocktail, dip a stirrer or a straw into it and take a little taste. And then, of course, throw that stirrer away. If it tastes good, I paraphrase Duke Ellington a lot. If it tastes good, it is good. But there are certain things I think you need to use a really particularly light touch with. Amari are wonderful. I love bitter flavors. But very often I've had an Amari-based drink that winds up tasting like cough medicine. A little bit of that goes a long way. Or very strong other kinds of heavily herbal liqueurs. I am a big fan of chartreuse. And another drink I love to make in the summer is basically a simple gin and soda or gin and tonic, but with just a very light green chartreuse rinse in the glass. And people can't believe that just a couple drops of chartreuse or even something like absinthe, just the tiniest bit of it goes a very long way and imparts something a little different and a little mysterious without overwhelming a drink. So if you're using ingredients that tend to have really strong flavors, start very, very light at first with a rinse in a glass, maybe just a bar spoonful of something. Don't, go crazy and pull out a 2-ounce jigger and think that's going to work right away because it'll probably be overwhelming.
Fair enough. What are some cocktail trends you're seeing that you're really sick of?
Most. I'm sick of most cocktail trends. I'd rather people not think about drinking in terms of trends and think about drinking only in terms of the thing that makes it matter most of all, which is pleasure. It was a few years back that I think really classic cocktails started to impose themselves on us in a big way again. And I love a martini and I love a good Manhattan, but I love them when I want them. You know, if I'm in the mood for that kind of thing, that's what I'm going to have. One thing that I do like seeing, I'm seeing people embrace things that I think are sometimes regarded as a little campy. It wasn't so long ago there was probably a little shame attached to having a big fruity, quote unquote, girl drink. I don't know if you've ever seen that great Kids in the Hall sketch about the girl drink drunk,
Absolutely.
where he's hiding in the closet drinking his big fruity drinks. If that's what you enjoy, have it. There shouldn't be any snobbery attached to drinking. There shouldn't be any real allegiance to any kind of trends. Drink what's going to make you happy. For me, in the dead of summer, that's often a bottle of High Life, and there's nothing wrong with that.
That's very good advice. Before we move on, I want to take a break here to say thanks again to Audible.com for supporting our channel. Here at Cookster, we are huge fans of good books and great food, so we're excited that Audible has such a tremendous library of culinary content, along with well over 150,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. Audiobooks are great to listen to when you're traveling, running errands, or cooking in the kitchen. Audible's My Library feature lets you access your books on either your PC or Mac or your mobile device, and Audible has free apps so you can download and listen on all of your devices. I have lately been listening to Gabriela Hamilton's Blood, Bones, and Butter. To download this audiobook for free or any other book you choose, go to audiblepodcast.com/Kara. That's audiblepodcast.com/Kara. So while we're talking about classic cocktails that are making a comeback, I wanted to talk a little bit about two-ingredient cocktails. I feel like sometimes people get a little bit overwhelmed when they start bartending at home and do the mistake of pouring in a jigger full of something that maybe just needs to be a rinse. And so it's sometimes good to start with the basics. So what are
I
some
totally
two-ingredient
agree.
cocktails that...
I totally agree with that. And I feel the same way about so much food. In some ways, the fewer ingredients, the better it's going to be.
Absolutely.
There's no need to dump everything into a glass. There's a time and place for that, maybe. I've had some good balanced drinks, to go back to that word, that do have three or four, even five ingredients. But that's tricky. And not all of our home bars are equipped to do that kind of work anyway. For just a two-ingredient drink, as I was saying, I'm really enjoying the chartreuse and gin combination. There are other things that I think go really nicely with gin, something a little sweet or something a little anise or caraway flavored. I've been interested in these anisey things lately, like pastis and like ouzo. And they just add a little depth and a little strangeness, and I mean that in a way I really like, to a drink. Gin, I think because gin has so much going on in it already, it doesn't need a lot to create something really terrific. So mixing gin with one other spirit in a pretty small quantity, maybe something a little heavier, a little bit sweeter, going easy on it, great. And then, of course, there are classic things when we think of a Manhattan. Just some good bourbon or another kind of whiskey, and vermouth, always great. I love these different kind of fortified aperitif wines, like Lillet. And Dubonnet, things I think of my mom drinking in the 70s that are still really inexpensive and mix really well with all kinds of spirits. I think that's a good way to go. Part of what people who love vodka love about vodka is that you can do just about anything to it. To me, that's what makes it a little bit less fun in some ways. But I think there's really not anything you can't mix with vodka. The darker liquors are maybe a little bit trickier for that. And I haven't had great success mixing rum with other alcoholic components, unless you count bitters, and that's a real stretch. Usually, I'll just stick with juices and soda water and simple things if I'm using rum, which I also love in the summer. But sticking to two, and I would say no more than three alcoholic ingredients in a cocktail is probably a good rule of thumb.
So I'd love to have you talk a little bit about your book, Drinking with Men, the story
Thank
behind
you.
it.
The story behind it. I've always been a bar person. I love bars. I've always felt really safe in bars. And I think media and pop culture tell women not to feel safe in bars. And I noticed that for me, the opposite was always going on. If I was feeling stressed out or feeling unhappy, I'd go to a good bar. And when I say a good bar, there are lots of kinds of good bars. But what I mean is a neighborhood bar, often a corner bar, a place where there are regulars, a place where you don't have to get dressed up or be expected to be in a great mood or be expected to wear anything in particular or to be a writer or to be this or to be that, just a good, solid neighborhood bar. These have always been places where, whether I'm in good mood or a bad mood, I've felt I could be myself in a really full way. And at a certain point, I noticed that even though I'd been feeling that way for years and being a regular in one bar or other since I was a teenager, it occurred to me fairly late in the game, I looked around and I said, there aren't that many other women here. And that's when I realized that maybe there was something a little anomalous and a little strange about how I was living my life, and decided I should write about that and try to figure out why I was doing what I was doing.
Yeah, that would be a good cocktail trend to bring back, is women going to bars alone.
It would be. And I like to think my book has encouraged some women to
Absolutely.
Do that.
Well, thank you so much for joining us today.
Cara,
this
was
really fun. And check out Rosie's book and join us next time for more tips and tricks from the kitchens of the world's best cooks.